So I suspect that most normal, well-adjusted people don't get excited about statistics about religion. But I'm not normal. And I think that even if you don't tend toward the wonkish like I do, you'll be interested to know that we are in the midst of a sea change in American religion. It starts in the mainstream Protestant denominations who are seeing the most rapid declines in their histories. Membership in the Presbyterian Church USA has declined 28% in the last 10 years. Think about this. This is a church that's been around 500 years since Calvin. It's been in the United States 250 years. It's declined 28% since 2005. The United Church of Christ is down 23% in the same time frame. The Episcopalians have declined 18%. I saw an article the other day about a United Methodist economist who was consulting for the denomination, and he told them they have just 15 years to reverse the slide if they want to sustain themselves financially. And right alongside that decline is a soaring rise in the number of people who, when asked about their religious affiliation, report that they have none. The latest Pew Survey of American Religion, released this spring, shows that these so-called nones, N-O-N-E-S, have increased from 16% of the population in 2007 to 23% in 2014, which is almost 50% increase in just 7 years. They're now neck and neck with evangelicals as the largest group in America. According to Pew, every category of Christianity has lost market share to the nones in the last 8 years. The mainline Protestants are down to 15%, a decline of 3.4 percentage points. The Catholics have fallen to 21%, down 3.1 points. The evangelicals remain the largest group at 25%, but they're also down 3.5 points from 2007. The Pew survey categorizes us as Unitarians and other liberal faiths, and we're holding our own. We're actually holding our own, but we have a tiny share. We're only 1%. Any way you look at it, this is a radical change in religious identity in an incredibly short amount of time. And the really intriguing thing about the nones is that they are disproportionately young, young adults. And while they're not affiliated with any denomination, they're not necessarily rejecting spirituality. About 31% of them identify themselves as atheists or agnostics. Another 39% say they are nothing in particular. And 30% say that religion is still important or very important in their lives. When they're interviewed about this, the largest number actually describe themselves as spiritual but not religious, or SBNRs, if you like acronyms. The reason they say they're not religious is that church, as they know it, is synonymous with doctrines that don't conform to their understanding of reality. It's about promoting archaic social mores that don't comport with their values, especially when it comes to gay and lesbian and transgender rights or women's rights or multiculturalism. And because they've grown up in a world that is rapidly transforming itself in multiple ways, these folks are a lot more interested in participating in the change than they are in preserving the institutions. So who does this remind you of? If you were starting with a clean sheet of paper and you decided to develop a whole new religion that reflected those values and that sense of agency, you couldn't do better than to discover Unitarian Universalism. It's taken us 4.5 centuries of challenging conventional religion, but we've arrived at a place that is theologically tailor-made for these folks. The problem, of course, is that they either don't know about us, or if they do know about us, they think we're a church like any other. But the other problem, and this is harder for us to cope with, is that our form, our specific way of being in religious community, might also be a holdback for some of these people. The idea that we always meet for 1 hour every Sunday morning everywhere in the United States might feel a little limiting. The notion that you should participate in committees that exist in perpetuity to do various administrative tasks might not be that appealing to people who think of themselves as change agents. Even the venerated 20-minute sermon, like the one I'm giving right now, embedded in the traditional hymn sandwich, that hasn't really changed since the Protestant Reformation, truthfully. You know, I love these things because I love our tradition. But if you are unchurched and you never identified with any particular faith, the idea that you need to show up somewhere at the same time every week to hear someone transmit the news of the day and impart wisdom doesn't seem all that contemporary. Particularly in a world where we're saturated with all kinds of information and specious claims to wisdom of all kinds. So a couple of years ago, I was invited to participate with the UUA and the UU Ministers Association in developing a new education program for entrepreneurial ministers. It turns out that we have a lot of ministers, especially young ones, who are out there experimenting with different kinds of religious community. The problem is that they're all out there, they're doing it by themselves, and they're not sharing what they're learning, and many of them don't have any, you know, education in management or leadership, much less entrepreneurship. So to help increase their odds of success, we've developed a 2-year intensive executive education program. It invites ministers to apply with a specific project in mind, and then it exposes them to leading professors of entrepreneurship and successful religious practitioners. So far, we've been able to attract some really great faculty from Stanford, from Northwestern. In fact, Lonnie's nephew, who I happen to know, is one of our faculty members, from Harvard, and from other schools who are teaching them about design thinking, about rapid prototyping, about failing fast, about developing value propositions, and ensuring product market fit. This is a little mind-bending for a bunch of ministers. But they're engaged and they're energized, and so far it's going better than we could have hoped. Along the way, a colleague and I went to visit with Rory McDonald, who is a business professor at the Harvard Business School. He's part of their disruptive innovation faculty that's headed up by Clay Christensen, who is the author of The Innovator's Dilemma, which is probably the Bible of entrepreneurship. And as we talked with Rory about what was going on in religion and the growth of the spiritual but not religious, he started asking us what we knew about their unmet needs. He especially wanted to know about the needs that they themselves may not be aware of. The truth is that we don't know enough about that yet. We have to do a little bit more ethnographic research to really figure that out. But the more we talked, the more we realized that if anything, the fundamental human needs that have traditionally been met by religious communities are actually growing. You know, the reality is that we live in an increasingly distracted and alienated world. And despite all of our virtual connectedness, the demographic data show that we are increasingly living by ourselves in single-person households. We're having children by ourselves and raising them by ourselves. And as the sociologist Robert Putnam has documented, we continue to lose connections with extended families and neighbors and community organizations, including churches. The virtual communities that we're all a part of have a lot of advantages. You know, our thousands of media options provide us unparalleled opportunities to learn and explore and relax. And our social media networks provide us the ability to reconnect to people that might otherwise have fallen away. They allow us to show empathy and affirmation en masse. And they give voice to our passions, whatever those might be. But virtual communities lack the one essential ingredient we require for human health and happiness: to be in authentic relationships with other people who are willing to make an unconditional commitment to be there for us, despite all of our differences and our imperfections. Connecting to a family, a friend, a small group, a minister with whom I can share my most intimate fears, my hopes, my dreams, that's something I cannot realistically do on Facebook. I can't have those kinds of conversations in 140 characters on Twitter. As Kathleen McTeague said in our reading this morning, religious communities like ours are one place where we can turn our busy minds to silence and our full hearts to one another. They are the one place where we can embody and fulfill that promise that we do not walk alone. I suspect that's what the spiritual but not religious are trying to tell us. They feel a deep yearning to be in authentic relationship with others who know them more completely, who share their values, whose lives meet and merge and flow together over time, and with whom they can stay grounded in what really matters amidst all the stresses and distractions of their lives. They want to be part of a community that encourages them to actively live out their values, that meets their needs for self-expression, and helps them grow together. Professor Cornel West delivered the WARE lecture at the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly last month in Portland, and boy, did he deliver it. It was spellbinding, and you can watch it if you like on the UUA website. And his central message that what we need at this particular moment more than anything else is to begin living with integrity. By integrity, he meant actually living our lives in a way that ties together our understanding of how the world works with our sense of our own gifts, with the reality that we deeply need each other. And the way we do that is by being part of a real community in which people make real ongoing commitments to one another. Of course, this is not a new idea. It's been the impetus for religious communities from the beginning of history. From the ancient Hindu rituals of daily communal life to the first century Christian communities that gathered secretly in each other's homes. And it's what contemplative spiritual communities have always done. Last year, the WARE lecture was given by Sister Simone Campbell, the leader of the Nuns on the Bus, who have been waging a campaign for economic fairness. You know, she talked about how even though she's an attorney and she's an activist, and her work is largely outside the convent, it is her spiritual community that gives her the support and the encouragement to, as she says, make a little good trouble, standing up for people who are being left out. It provides her the luxury of being wholeheartedly connected to what really matters. It gives her the support to live out her values with integrity. Surprising though it may seem, the nuns and other devout religious people are actually reflecting the same needs of those other nuns who claim to be spiritual but not religious. So the more we talked with Professor McDonald, the more excited he got about the opportunities for disruptive innovation in the market for religion. The current forms of religious community might be missing the mark for some of these folks, not for others, but there's a strong case to be made that the fundamental need for religious community is growing and that some smart entrepreneurs who take the time to do the research and design thoughtful experiments and fail fast will eventually unlock a tremendous opportunity. Fortunately, there are a wide range of experiments already underway, and many are being led by Unitarian Universalists. Some of them are already proving to be successful. For example, several congregations have demonstrated that it's possible to construct multi-site ministries that allow them to start up new communities tailored to people in different locations or different life stages while sharing the resources of a larger church. Our new startup project, the Unitarian Universalists of Lakewood Ranch, is a great example of adapting that idea to our own situation. And it's already benefiting from the learning of these successful experiments. But I want to share with you a few other examples to give you a sense of the many ways UUs are reconceiving religious community. The People's Church in Chicago is a joint UU and United Church of Christ congregation in a huge historic 1926 building in the Uptown neighborhood. This is a picture of their auditorium. The church's membership had dwindled from a peak of 4,000 in the 1940s to just 30. Imagine what it'd be like to be worshiping in that space with 30 people. Then a young UU minister, deciding he had nothing to lose, decided to offer a place where creative Northsiders could gather to share and perform arts, from visual arts to music and drama, while building a religious community together. They used their interest in the arts to become better people and help build a better world. They call it the Coffee Hour. And the tagline is, caffeine for the soul. It happens at 11 every Sunday in the church's space, and it's attracted over 320 people, many of them who have started coming to the church service, which actually starts earlier at 10. A little further out on the spectrum, a group of mostly young adult UUs in the Boston area decided they wanted to live out their UU values by physically living together. They founded the Lucy Stone Cooperative. They established a 501c3, they arranged for financing, and they worked together to restore a beautiful three-story Victorian home into 11 rental units. They share dinner every night, they worship on Sunday evenings, and they do social justice projects together in the community. It's proven to be both a community success, the place is full, most people who join don't leave, and it's a financial success, so much so that they're in the process of buying a second home. Sacred Fire, Unitarian Universalist in Carlboro, North Carolina, is a more radical version of this idea. Instead of being based on a communal residence, Sacred Fire is centered around work for food justice in their community. The idea is to develop sustainable food networks and connect food with those in need through a nonprofit they founded called Mutual Aid Carlboro. Reverend Nathan Hollister, who goes by NATO, I love that name, is building a religious community around this justice work. It includes biweekly worship that's centered on a meal, a small group ministry based on their proprietary social justice curriculum. And part of their revenue comes from providing consulting services to other congregations that are interested in being more deeply involved in their communities. Finally, there are some experiments that upend the whole premise of church as a particular place where people go together. The sanctuaries in Washington, D.C. describe themselves as a diverse arts community with soul, promoting spiritual growth and social change through the creative arts. Those of you who were here early this morning got a preview of a video that was actually put together by members of that congregation. If you want to, you're welcome to stay after because we'll replay it. But you look at this and you will not recognize it as your typical Unitarian Universalist congregation. But their idea is to connect diverse people and creative self-expression with community social change by hosting performances for social justice causes, events they call soul slams, and monthly community huddles that include dinner. They have a minister, but they have no one physical location. And there are many other projects. There's a project to employ the homeless in building homes while also building a religious community. There's an organization in Boston that repurposes empty church buildings to house nonprofits in a way that allows to keep the denominations, to keep the buildings open and serving the community. There's even a psychiatric counseling center in California that is becoming a full-fledged UU religious community for its patients. Now, the experience of entrepreneurship tells us that we'll be lucky if 10% of these ideas actually work. But the failures will be almost as valuable because they'll inform the next set of experiments. And the larger point is that these folks, and there are more of them coming on stream, are all really on to something. They just don't know exactly what the shape of it is. There are good reasons to believe that the market for Unitarian Universalism is not shrinking. In fact, the need for our religious values and our inclusiveness, our interfaith fluency, our commitment to social justice might be greater than ever. The challenge for us is, can we be nimble enough to avoid being eclipsed by other disruptive innovations that capitalize on the opportunity? But if we're the ones who do the research and the experimentation, if we're flexible enough to adopt the best ideas as they come along, we can take advantage of the fact that we've already arrived at the place where many of the spiritual but not religious want to be. We might even convince them that they can be spiritual and religious. As Edwin Schemp said in our opening words, we can remain a religion that looks not to a perfect heaven, but to a good earth, is respectful of the past, but not limited to it. A religion that trusts in growing and is in a conspiracy with change. As we leave this place and venture out into the busy, distracted week ahead, we go secure in the knowledge that we're part of a religious community to which we can always return for support and sustenance and assurance that we do not walk this path alone. May we continue to be that prophetic church that reveres the past but trusts the dawning future more, one that ventures boldly and explores to ensure this kind of community evolves and exists for generations to come. Amen.